Hey, you know what, Tony?
I don't.
Happy Christmas.
And yeah, and Merry Christmas to you. Why Happy Christmas? Are you Harry Potter?
No, I well,
I don't like referencing Harry Potter
there's
anymore.
nothing wrong with saying. There's other people say Happy Christmas. What the? I'll tell you what. I was gonna say Happy Holidays,
Ah.
but then I was like, no, it's like it's at the time of recording. It's Christmas
It's
Eve
Christmas Eve.
because I'm an asshole. Because I like super overbooked myself this week.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No, hey, it's not your fault. It's super my fault. And as soon as I was like, I'm so sorry, I'm gonna have to push this, I was like, we're gonna record on Christmas Eve.
Recording Christmas. It's all right. I already got all the cookies made, and I planned breakfast for tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
And like I have all the presents bought. One of them's not gonna get here, obviously.
Oh my gosh.
I ordered it
That's
in November, but it came from another country, so.
always like a it's such a tough thing to swallow as you get closer and closer and you're like but it's gonna get here.
Yeah, just get here.
It's refreshing the shipping post, like come on.
It got out of customs yesterday. So
Oh.
there's like no way.
No. No.
Unless just the most dedicated FedEx drivers just running down the street. It's gotta be there by Christmas.
It has to be there. They throw it through your window.
Yep.
But in order to celebrate this season,
Yeah.
we went back, way back. We pulled out a vintage bottle out of the casket. Where do you keep wine?
I mean, I think you can keep wine in a casket, but I think now you're talking about like a casket of wine. A basement, I guess. A
A
cellar.
basement, a cellar, yes. Yes, a cellar even.
A cellar even.
It feels I realize now that I'm like stealing your thunder. I'm like taking the thing that you do.
That's perfectly fine, but the fact that you didn't say welcome to direct video is giving me shivers. I'm
Oh
like
gosh. You know, we gotta yeah, you're right. See, this is I'm the see, and now look, once again, I am sitting here in the chair labeled asshole.
I'm just glad you get to do that twice.
I'll let you take over.
Okay. Welcome to Direct Video VHS.
VHS.
podcast where we pair movies like fine wine. Hosted by just two guys, as established.
And who are you?
Well, I'm Tony Robusto. I mean, does it matter though?
I'm
Think about it.
Andy Reyes.
So this is our yearly holiday episode. It's funny to call it a holiday episode. I think every time it's explicitly been a Christmas movie.
Well, you
Although
say this.
this is maybe the least, I'm torn on this one. On the one hand, it almost feels like the least amount of Christmas movie we have ever watched. On the other hand, it really portrays one of the biggest stressors about Christmas just
Yeah.
really well.
Okay. I don't want to get too far ahead, but like the gift of the Magi is like one of the most Christmas things in I think in the US.
Jamie referred to this as a reverse gift of the Magi, which I thought was kind of a fun way to describe it.
No, yeah, I immediately was like, "Oh, this is gift of the Magi."
Yeah.
We're their gift of the Magi-ing themselves, sort of. But I wonder, I wonder how familiar people not in the U.S. are with the gift of the Magi, right?
I mean, I do feel like it is as big, and you're right, I could only say it from my perspective, but it feels like as, like, all-encompassing as A Christmas Carol, which is like, yeah, people are gonna do a Gift of the Magi story. Right. I think, did we watch one a couple years ago, I think, with Mickey Mouse,
We did the Mickey Mouse, yeah, a Mickey Mouse, wait, hold on, it's here. It's in this list of adaptations. Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas.
Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas. That was not a good Gift of the Magi story, but it was an all right Mickey Mouse cartoon, I seem to recall.
Yeah. It was fine. It was a fun time. The first thing about this movie that really, well, slapped me in the face is that it is based on a book.
What? I don't think I noticed that.
It's in, like, the first second. It's, like, the first thing that comes up after the movie starts is based on the book. And I was like, well, this is the next 10 minutes of my life.
Based on Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. And it's, oh, this is cute.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, watercolor, like, kids books. If you've ever seen, like, a, I don't even know how to describe it. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen, like, I guess if you've ever read any of the A.A. Milne Winnie the Poohs, it's kind of got that look going for it.
Yes, it does. Yeah, it does look like the, I can't remember the illustrator on those, but yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I always thought, like, Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas is up there for me as, like, this is, like, a Jim Henson original.
Mm-hmm. And it's not.
It really isn't.
Even though, and so this makes this bit weirder. Because Kermit introduces it, and we go out on Kermit.
Yeah.
And Kermit's like, this is me. I'm not really in this movie, but you're going to see Emmett Otter in his Jugman Christmas.
You're about to see two people have a really bad time. It's like, oh, thanks, Kermit.
I do wonder if the River Bottom Nightmare Band was added by Jim Henson. That feels Jim Henson to me.
Yeah, the summary does not mention the River Bottom Gang or the River Bottom Nightmare Band. So, and also it does say that all the music was original. That they that obviously, I guess the book couldn't have music in it.
Nah, they got Paul Williams, so.
Oh wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
So personal opinion.
Yeah.
I think the music actually drags down Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas in kind of a major way.
It really slows the pacing down.
Most of the songs are, like, almost hymns, they sound like.
Yeah.
And they have kind of a choral vibe. The only two that don't have that are Barbecue.
Yeah.
And the River Bottom Nightmare Band song. Because Barbecue's supposed to sound like a jug band singing it, and River Bottom Nightmare Band is a rock song.
It's explicitly making fun of, like Led Zeppelin.
Right. Which is something that, like, you know that Jim Henson can do, because he's gotta, they have a rock band in the Muppets that just does rock shit all the time. So. Yeah.
And it's all those actors, too.
Yes.
Right? Which is, I think, the thing that really wilded me out. I think, I don't know. On the one hand, I liked the music. It made me upset at the quality of the songs in Country Bear.
Oh, if the songs in the Country Bear sounded anything like this, I would like them a lot better.
That's the thing, right? I was like, this is some real like folksy Southern sound in music. It's putting, you know, as a person who grew up in California, it's really putting the heartland of the South into me or whatever.
All right. Let me just talk about this. So
yeah.
So the first real scene of the movie, because first we get Kermit. He's doing his fun riding on a bike trick. Everybody loves it.
It's such a good trick.
Crashes into a pole. Gets bullied by these kids from River Bottom.
He gets mugged.
He gets a little mug. They actually steal his scarf and then throw it out immediately, so it's like 4 feet away from him. It's fucking rude, for sure. But I, like, watch that scarf like he's not even putting it on, he's throwing it out the window.
That's true.
And then we get into the real story, which is about Emmett Otter and his mom, Alice Otter. And the first thing that happens is they are singing a song while rowing on the river. And the song is about...
Yeah?
Presumably Alice's mother.
Could be her mother-in-law.
Could be her mother or mother-in-law. It could also be her grandmother, I suppose. Because this could be a slightly older family song.
Yeah.
But in any case, this is a song about how this woman was so fat that you could use her pajamas as a bunch of different comedic things, like a pirate sail.
Not her pajamas.
Oh, swimsuit. Pajamas. It was a swimsuit. Yes,
it was a bikini.
Right. Hilarious. And that when she passed, it was so sad, but they got so much use out of all the cloth that they got. And here's the thing, this song is sung like a hymn. It is sung like, if you're not listening to the actual lyrics, you would think it was a sad song. Like, if you did not know English and you heard it, you would just kind of assume that.
You would be like, oh, this is one of those church things.
And it to its credit, does a lot to tell you the tone of the movie. Like, yes, it's going to be silly, we're going to have jokes, but it's also going to sound like this.
It's going to be a bit sad.
It's going to be a bit sad, kind of the whole way through. There's never going to be a moment where you're like, this has stopped being sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I really didn't like that song. Because it's just so weird. It's so weird.
It's so weird, the fact that after a little while, you're like, they appear to be singing about a real person.
A real person.
Knew personally, who is now dead. And it's like...
So, Emmett Otter and his mother, Alice Otter, seem to be known to the entire community with which they reside, the poorest people in the world.
Yeah, you could make a strong argument, particularly if you watch other Jim Henson stuff, that Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas is a stealth movie about how the United States should pivot to socialism.
Yes, you could. It's like obviously, one of the huge parts of the Muppet Christmas Carol is A Christmas Carol.
Even the original Christmas Carol, for sure.
Is man, rich people really bite, and they should be nicer.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie posits the question, what if there are no rich people to be nicer?
Right.
What do you do then?
What the Riverside, I forget what this is called. This is called Riverside. I don't care. But their town has, they don't have rich people. They appear to top out at upper middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like the restaurant owner and like the mayor are probably more like upper middle class, but they're not like real fancy. The mayor's wife freaking sucks, but like.
Yeah, she's a very hoity-toity.
But you don't get the feeling that, like, oh, this is like a millionaire hoarding her wealth over these people. This is one of the people who has slightly more than somebody else and is using, and the fact that she has slightly more than somebody else makes her think she's better than them, which is a kind of person you will meet. That's a really hard person to have a conversation with, you know?
Yeah.
Fuck these people. But
no,
but you're right. They're the poorest people in an impoverished town. Nobody else really has a bunch of money to throw around. Everybody gets really excited about a $50 prize
at the local talent show.
At the local talent show, yes.
Now, this, so we meet Alice and Emmett rowing down the river. It's the thing that they do to make money is they do people's laundry.
Well, Alice does people's laundry. Emmett does like odd jobs, right?
Right.
We learn. Sorry, continue.
And they seem to not be very good at it, doing, that is to say, doing other people's laundry or doing odd jobs.
This is not clear to me. Yeah, they're not good at doing odd jobs, but that lady fucking sucked, so I don't care.
Well, at one point, Emmett's like, Alice asks Emmett if he got paid for his last odd job, and he was like, oh, well, I broke the stairs, so
yeah,
no.
Yeah, I broke the stairs, so I had to repair them, and it's like, yeah, that's fair.
Rough, but you should, I mean, yeah.
The only thing I'll say about that, I guess there's two things. First, I wasn't sure I believed the mayor's wife that there was a burn mark on her laundry. Either. Or if this was a way of just paying out less. But the other thing is that according to this storybook that you have pointed me to, part of it is that they get cheated out of wages.
Money.
So I don't know if Emmett was just told that he broke those steps or what. Maybe it was just supposed to be a comedic beat. Maybe I'm just supposed to think that's funny. But we also see him fixing a fence, and he is like, this isn't fixing, this is a whole rebuilding. And he's right. But also, I saw how he put, like, four nails in the same fucking spot, and Emmett, that's not fixing a fence either.
Yeah, it's a rough job for sure.
And I was okay with that, because I was like, this is what she deserves for having these children rebuild her fence for 50 cents.
That's true. So they make their way to...
Did you ever read any Paddington?
No.
It felt like every character in this movie, besides the, you know, our heroes, were kind of the mean old neighbor in Paddington who is always trying to, like, get Paddington to do stuff for him for free, and then Paddington always fucks it up in a real major way.
Yeah, a little bit. It's got that energy.
Yeah.
So the otters go to Waterville and to do errands. And then we get to learn about Pa Otter, who
a delightful individual.
Who was a snake oil salesman. But I'm not sure what this movie means by that.
So they're always saying, oh, nobody these days wants to oil a snake. And I think what we're supposed to take away from that is that he's not a snake oil salesman in the traditional grifter sense. In fact, in my mind, what I imagined is that essentially what happened to Pa Otter is he ended up in part of a pyramid scheme where, like, you know, those like knife ones.
Yeah, Cutco.
Where you like, oh, you're going to sell these knives to all your family, but you can sell them the ability to sell knives. He bought the ability to sell snake oil and then just ended up with a bunch of snake oil. And then because he's like the other otters, really, truly thought snake oil was a good thing to sell people. That's what I believe happened, because I can't imagine that he's like a weird grifter who's just so bad at it that he left his wife and son completely destitute.
I thought that is what I thought. I was like, oh, he was just a bad con man who loved his family. And he was like, this next con's going to be the one that gets us out. But when they kept saying, oh, no, these days nobody wants to oil a snake, I thought maybe he was like a snake massager.
There is a snake. It could happen.
But yeah, no, I think your thing makes a lot more sense.
That's the thing about this movie. They want you to fill in the holes yourself. They want you to.
Right.
This is cinema, Andy.
Right. No, absolutely. This is art. So they speak wistfully of Pa and his unsuccessful ability to care for them as a family. And then he died And since then, they've had to sell everything they've ever owned.
Yep. They have two things still. They have the wash tub, and they have a set of tools.
Well, and they have a house.
And they do have the house, yes. Could be worse. Could be worse, but they're very much not having, like, a big Christmas. They also never seem to go hungry.
Right.
Because
I think that would be a bit much, right, for...
Well, when they're talking about the prize money, neither of them is like, and we can have a big feast. So, like, they're not worried about having to beg off other people or making it through the winter or fucking anything. They just wish that they could do something nice for each other on Christmas.
Right. There's an amount of, like, we have enough, but we don't have enough to give each other a gift.
Right.
But I really do love this. This is probably, I think this is the only part of the movie that really works for me, which is when Emmett and Wendell Porcupine are fixing Old Lady Possum's fence. And Alice is hanging out with, I believe she's hanging out with Mrs. Mink.
Yeah.
And we cut between both of these groups talking about this $50 talent show prize.
Mrs. Mink might be my favorite character.
Oh, she walks in.
She just came over for some, you know, light chit-chat and gossip. And to use the fucking spinning wheel that Alice took from her at some point. And she hasn't been like, Alice, can we buy my fucking spinning wheel?
Right. She's just like, oh, Alice, I came here to use the spinning wheel I lent you.
And Alice is like, I could never enter a talent show. And she's like, yeah, okay. And she's like, don't you try to talk me into it.
Stop trying to sweet talk me into this. But yeah, Emmett and Alice are both like eventually talk themselves into entering the talent show because the money would just be so useful.
It is also what Pa would do, which I think is fucking funny.
That's the thing. That's not the lesson you want to take out of this.
Pa was bad at this, guys.
Pa was explicitly not successful.
Yeah. But Emmett wants to get his mom a piano, because apparently she plays piano. And she wants to get him a guitar. The only issue I have with the guitar is he sees a used guitar in a window for $40. And he was like, oh, wow, I want that for Christmas. And it's like, Emmett, you know what your finances are like. Almost any other child character.
Why would you say that?
Almost any other child character, I'd be like, oh, he doesn't really understand what we don't have the money means. But this kid, he knows.
He's intimately familiar.
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, Ma is thinking, well, I could use the $40 to buy Emmett the guitar. Emmett, who has to split the money four ways.
Yes.
With the rest of the jug band.
He wants to put a down payment on a piano. Now, Emmett, this is a scam. Don't rent your pianos.
On a used piano.
On a used piano. Down payment on a used piano. That's just going to get taken away. Like, no. And it's not even yours. You can't even hawk it if you really need to.
Right. Like, what are you doing? Like, get your mom like a xylophone. You know, and then work your way up from there.
But the point is, though, that for Emmett to join the jug band, he needs to make a wash tub bass, which you make by punching a hole in the wash tub for the string.
Mm-hmm. And they sung a whole song about how you don't do that.
Yes. And for Alice to join the talent show. Now, this is a moment where I was like, I don't know. She was like, I would need, like, something to wear. And I was like, cool. These people know you, though. And, like, your talent isn't dressing up nice.
Right.
So this, her thing felt a lot more frivolous to me.
Yeah.
Because she sells Emmett's toolbox in order to buy fabric so she can make herself a dress so she can join the talent show.
Yeah.
But there's never any indication that you can be underdressed for the talent show.
There's also an amount of, like, I don't know how to say this, but the dress is fine. It's not particularly extravagant when compared to her previous dress.
Right.
Other than it looks like very fancy curtains.
Yeah, I don't know if this is just like a kind of keeping up with the Joneses that is less of a thing now than it was in 1977. But like...
But everyone knows that you two are poor as sin. Like,
yeah. Yeah, everybody's here's the nicest, poorest people we know. Like,
they're so nice, in fact, that we never pay them any money.
Yeah, been there.
So they do this. They go to the talent show, and the talent show is a kind of a nightmare situation. When you think about what makes a good talent show, right? You want stuff that's good.
Interesting.
And everything in this talent show, it seems, was bad.
Well, they have like a really good chance of winning because nobody else is even like half-assing it. They are all giving the most garbage performance you've ever seen. Now, I'll say one thing about this scene that I like. Is there are a lot of sort of contrived reasons why Emmett and Alice do not see each other for like a good amount of time at the talent show.
They both leave each other a note on the kitchen table, and I'm just like, how did neither of you see the other note?
I love that. But, like, everybody when they come in are immediately separated into the men's and women's dressing rooms.
Yeah.
When the jug band finds out that somebody else is singing Barbecue, and here's the thing, they're doing it like fucking shit. They could have still sung Barbecue. A good song. A bop. But they decide they have to go out and practice a different song, which is Brothers, which is not as good, frankly.
No, it's just not as good. It's simply not as good of a song.
So Alice doesn't see them, and so neither of them see each other until Alice is performing.
Yeah.
So Alice does her song. The kids do their song. They both think they did really well. And then in comes... We did not actually talk about these characters.
No, because I wanted to give them their own moment. Because they're awesome.
So, okay. So we have, according to this list on Wikipedia, Chuck Stoat, Fred Lizard, Howard Snake, Popeyed Catfish, and Stanley Weasel.
Yes.
Chuck is the leader who I don't think anyone, I don't think the rest of his gang ever know what he's thinking. Okay? He's just scary. He's apparently a stoat. He looks like a bear. And
yeah,
they've been going around doing like low key like damage all around town.
Yeah, the mildest of crimes.
The mildest of crimes. But one of the things that I feel like really highlights that they don't know what's going on. Chuck's head is Chuck early on in the movie wanted to go into the music shop.
Yeah.
And his friends were like, okay, I guess we'll do that. And I just think that's interesting because I actually think that the emotional arc for these characters is that they are sort of rebels without a cause, just causing a mess, and they don't have like positive friendships until Chuck convinces them to get together and form a band.
And now they can express themselves.
They can express themselves and everybody's cheering for them and they are loving it. They are so happy after they do their song. I also need to mention Popeyed the Catfish.
Yeah.
Because he's great.
He is a fully water-bound Muppet, which is impressive. He's just a fish.
He's
when they all go in, when they all go into the music store, they leave him in the trunk of the car, which is full of water. And he's like, I guess I'll stay here, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. He reads really as like a their handicapped friend who they make sure to take everywhere with them. It's kind of adorable.
But then, but also they sometimes forget that he can't just get out of the car.
Yeah, but when they did the whole rock band thing, he's essentially like a backup dancer just swimming in a big tank in the back.
It's like a tank mounted on top of the speakers, I think.
I don't even know how they got it on there. It must be so fucking heavy.
Oh, man. So they roll in last minute. The mayor is like, we don't normally do this. And I was like, this is your first time.
Yeah. I quite enjoyed the mayor as somebody who's just trying his best.
He just wants to have a good talent show. He's like, this is really going to bring the community together. And, you know, and his wife is an absolute nightmare.
There's a good line that he has. When the kids are, they're outside practicing, and he's like, get in here, you're gonna miss your mark, we want this to look professional. It's like, we are so past that, man.
Dude, you had an act that's whole thing was just a bunch of stuffed squirrels just being thrown around at each other. It's good stuff.
Good stuff.
So yeah, the River Bottom Gang like blows it out of the park.
Oh yeah, no contest.
They win, and Emmett, Alice, and the rest of the Jug Band are like, they're really sad about it. They're like, oh well, I guess we threw away everything we had for nothing.
Yeah, and then they decide they sing their songs at the same time, so they kind of like overlap and flow into each other. Yeah.
Before we get to that.
Yeah.
The sponsor of the talent show.
Yes.
Who we find out was who was he?
It was Doc Bullfrog.
Doc Bullfrog, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Comes out and is like, hey, we think you guys did great, but y'all were missing that special something. Which is a real fucked up thing to say.
Because here's the thing. I do not disagree that the River Bottom Nightmare Band had a special something. They stole the show.
Right.
I understand fully. However, this was a contest between essentially three groups. Because everybody else was fucking garbage, Doc.
And what's the point of bringing it up?
Alice Otter singing her heart out for her little boy.
For her son?
Who is up there with his little friends? These are kids, man. Like, and they're blowing it out of the park as far as they're concerned, okay? It does seem weird. It feels like it's supposed to be like kind of a pep talk, like, yeah, you guys keep at it. You'll do great. And it's like, there's no...
They're not gonna make it to next year.
There's no like Hollywood in this town, man. Like, this isn't like Chicago. Nobody's gonna print their records.
So then they walk off all depressed. Like, obviously, Alice and Emmett confess to each other that they had sold each other stuff.
Yeah, Alice is like, I sold your stuff, and. And Emmett's like, well, you can see what I did to your wash tub. It's pretty good. You get some wax. Plug it up. It's fine.
Right. I feel like it's eminent. Just leave the nail in there.
Could. Might be able to. Like.
Yeah. They're walking along. They're walking along the frozen river. And that's when Alice decides, well, what if we just sang our songs together? Did one of those, you know.
A mash them up.
Two-part harmonies.
Yeah.
Yeah, mashup. Thank you. What if we did a collab?
It's gonna blow up both of our YouTube channels.
It's gonna really get them where they need to go. You know, they have a lovely little time singing their little song. They happen to be walking by a Doc Bullfrog's restaurant, where all the people who have money can afford to eat for Christmas.
Yeah.
Fucked up.
I mean, it's not right. Not fucked up for sure. And apparently there is a little bit of tourism in this town because this is where, like, Kermit goes to eat.
Yeah, correct. But he and a couple of people from the restaurant walk outside to hear them sing, and they give him a big old round of applause. And Doc Bullfrog is like, would you look at that? Y'all are talented.
Well, he hires them to work for him, which is, like, best case scenario. What were they going to do with that $50? Buy one gift this one time?
Right, no, right.
He Doc Bullfrog completely changed their lives.
Right. He is going to, like, employ them and pay them a regular wage for regular work.
Yeah. That's great. Man, that's the dream. Are you kidding? Regular
that
work
would be,
for a regular right. wage?
Whoa.
My hours are so weird.
Right. And so they start singing in the restaurant, and Kermit's like, that's
the movie. Can I mention the problem though? Here's the problem. We heard Our World. That's Alice's song. We heard Brothers. Yeah. That's Emmett's yeah. song. Then they do what's listed as Brothers in Our World. So now they're singing right. again. And then they sing that same song again in the next scene. And I was pretty over it.
I was like, we have in fact listened to these songs three times each.
Yeah, it was like, this is a lot.
And then they sing a reprise of When the River Meets the Sea.
Yeah, which is, that was Pa Otter's favorite song. And the only one, oddly, that has a Wikipedia entry.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had just assumed it's because it was like an older song or something. It's not. It was written by Paul Williams for this.
Apparently it was sung by John Denver in his Muppets album.
And Robin the Frog.
I wasn't going to mention Robin the Frog, but you're right. I should have.
Robin the Frog is like the saddest, cutest Muppet.
Right. Well, was that the Muppet that played Tiny Tim?
Yeah.
God, he's so small and he looks like an actual frog. Though written for one Christmas story and featured in another, the lyrics are not holiday related, but symbolic of death as a peaceful transition to an afterlife. This is the movie that we're watching.
So this is we're coming to my real issue with Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, which is it's not hitting a vibe that I particularly want to hit this time of year. You know, it's not that it's a bad film, and it's not that I dislike the songs. It's right. that it's almost like relentlessly morose the whole time.
It feels... I mean, it feels so unlike a Muppets movie.
Yes, it feels
because the thing about I'm a recent Muppet fan, right? I'm a person who got into the Muppets in my 20s, but like the whole thing about them is almost how unrelentingly joyful and optimistic they are.
Yes.
And so to just be hit with this like level of like surreal like poverty. Like even in the Muppet movie, like when Kermit's living in the swamp, it's like, well, they're not.
He's not unhappy in the
they're
swamp.
They're not destitute.
Yeah. He's a frog. He's supposed right. to be there.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just so weird.
It is such a snapshot of poverty that even though technically both Emmett and Alice are pretty optimistic, their optimism feels like foolish. Mm-hmm.
It makes the movie sadder.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, look at how happy these two still are in spite of everything. And it's like, no, they should be miserable. They should be upset.
Yeah, or at least angry, you know, but they don't really get there.
Yeah, it's not it almost feels like the movie is saying, well, it's not their place to be upset about all this. And it's like, hey, you know what, man? Fuck you. Their life sucks. And it really does feel like Emma and Ma really learn all the wrong lessons from all of this.
Well, they learn... I mean, okay, so you can make a certain argument that they're about to learn how nice it is to have regular work. And they literally can't go back to their old job.
Right.
I guess they probably have enough money to buy a new wash tub, but...
I mean, do they?
I don't know. Do they get tips, you think? My only issue is that they're in a 5-person band now. They really do need to cut a record.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you would assume that at some point they do, but
they're still not going to be living big.
No. But that's kind of the thing is like what Mama and Emmett learned was like, well, I guess we should be more like Pa.
Right.
And it's like, no. It didn't work. Right? Like, it didn't work. You didn't win the talent show. Some other guy was like, I'll pay. Well, I guess it was the same guy. But they didn't know that.
But right.
Like, I don't know.
Maybe it they should happened. Have been looking for work that would match with their talents, like music, instead of work that they were not very good at.
Right. I don't know. It just feels... It's such a weird movie. It's such a weird movie. And yeah, I guess, like, the thing about it that I liked, that I couldn't stop thinking about.
I wonder if you're going to say the same thing that I am. Okay, go.
These gosh darn sets.
Okay. 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 When they're rowing on the river.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah?
The boat is moving.
Yeah.
On the river.
They're rowing. They're actually rowing.
So
yeah, how?
The fascinating thing, one of the great things about watching, especially a Jim Henson movie, but like a lot of older movies that use practical effects, is that like I'll be actually taken out of the movie in a way that I find really enjoyable. So so for instance, I just watched Superman. It has crypto in it. And there was never a moment where I was like, that's a real dog. I was like, right. this is a fake magic dog that they animated, which is fine. And I don't have any problem with that. But no. With Emmett Otter, that boat with just two puppets in it is moving along a river. And I was like, okay, how? The only thing I could think of is that the water, there's like a bottom to it, and that they can reach their hands through. And then, but that would mean that there were two puppeteers puppeting these puppets and slowly walking so that the puppets would be moving.
Or it doesn't have a bottom to it, and there are two drowning puppeteers giving the performance of their life.
I mean, that might be it. That's essentially how they did the swap scene, right?
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying is like, you look at it and you're like, it's genuinely, like, astounding. And also,
they could be, do you think that they were in little tanks that were, like, attached to the thing and just, it was, like, pushed along? Any way they did it is insane.
I at first I was like, oh, they're doing like a motorized Disney thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, well, no, the mouths are moving. Those are hands in there.
Those are hands in there. Yeah, sometimes you can tell like, oh, this one they did a marionette instead of a hand puppet. These are hand puppets. That's what's fucked up.
Right, right. And maybe it's just like artfully cut. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I have no idea.
They really sell it. They really, and I guess that's the thing about these Jim Henson projects is they're always bumping the lamp with that stuff. They're always like, we're going to get Kermit riding a bike.
Yes.
Right. We're going to get at one point, the River Bottom Boys are all on snowmobiles and they're snowmobiling around. But the thing about this that really gets me is the fact that like the entire set, everything on the set, the water, the snow, the trees, the houses, it's all built. Like none of this was shot quote unquote, outside.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's all on like a soundstage of some kind with like painted backgrounds and stuff. And it looks amazing. It looks so good.
Okay, so there's a video that I watch considerably more often than I watch Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it is the outtakes for Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
Correct.
Which is just 10 minutes of Frank Oz losing his fucking mind. It's yeah. great. Because what I'm thinking of is actually just one scene. It's the music store where drum rolls out. And what's great about that is I have no idea about the size of this place until I see a human being reach his arm out and grab the drum. And I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, fuck.
Are you serious?
Right. There is. If you look at that sidewalk, there's a human being lying under there.
I'm just going to lay on the pavement for a minute, son.
Oh, man. It's so good. It's so good. And, like, yeah, it's just one of those. It gives you, like, a slight insight into, like, the magic. But mm-hmm. the thing is unlike when you see, like, a blooper from Superman, the new mm-hmm. Superman, because there's one floating around out there because of a scene in which Alan Tudyk improvises a line.
Okay, sure. He does that shit.
And it breaks the actor who plays Superman. It absolutely destroys him. But when you look at that scene, it's one guy dressed mm-hmm. up like Superman, sitting on a block of ice, surrounded by green.
Right.
With a I'm gonna say it, a very naked Alan Tudyk. Right? Like, you know, you can see all of the Tudyk. It's all out there.
You can see each of his Tudyks.
Correct. And it's like, this is funny, but when you see, like, bloopers from these Muppet movies, it just looks like the movie.
It's just the movie.
Right. It's just the movie. It's because what are they going to do?
One of the great things about Muppet movie bloopers, okay, is that sometimes the characters will react to a blooper as though the other character just made it instead of the puppeteer.
Right. Well, because, you know, these guys are consummate professionals.
Well, I genuinely think it's because, like, well, even when you break the illusion, like, even when you break from the script, it's still Rolf the dog talking to Scooter, the weirdly normal human.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, it's just kind of these two guys chatting. I shouldn't have picked Scooter. It's weird how normal looking he is.
Right. He's just...
just like a regular guy.
He's just a regular guy. But it's one of those things where I guess it's one of the things about the Muppets and about this kind of movie in general. That, like, you can't lose the magic, because the magic is tangible. It's physically there,
mm-hmm.
right? That, unlike CGI, which, like, I think our generation, I don't know about older people, but, like, people my age and younger, I know, are, like, very attuned to, like, this is, nothing on the screen is real.
Right.
And it just doesn't have, and it's like, there's nothing you could do to sell that, the weight of, like, watching these fucking otters row a boat through real water. And like, where are the, I know, my brain knows human beings are doing this, but where are they? Right? And that's just, you can't beat that.
It is a similar feeling, I think, to watching the old Batman movie, Batman 66.
Yeah.
Where we watched that fight scene, and we talked about that fight scene because there were people. It was not a good looking fight scene, particularly.
No.
But because it wasn't using any camera tricks, it was just people, like, following through on fake punches and the other person falling over, and there was something, like, viscerally real about it, even though it was obviously more fake than a modern movie. But because right, I could see all the action, it felt more real, you know?
Right. It doesn't... Adam West is throwing his body.
Yes!
Right? He is... You can see him launch himself into these fucking, like, cardboard walls. And he's not holding back.
We don't have to shake the camera or anything, you know?
Right, right. We don't have to do a super close-up on Christian Bale and Bane, like, hugging each other. I'll tell you something, which is that I watched Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas live on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant I did have comments from other people kind of rolling through the side. And there were a couple of people in there who were like, what is this?
Do Gen Zers, like, not know about the Muppets anymore? Is that where we're at?
I think they know about the Muppets, but this isn't...
It is removed, for sure.
It's right. There's other... If you miss Kermit, you're just kind of watching a puppet movie. And you're like, hold on a minute.
Why are these puppets so sad?
Right. I think the Muppets have a bit of a... They have like a pop cultural effect on people.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think a lot of people are just like, yeah, you know, the Muppets. Even if they haven't seen it. Oh, you know, Sesame Street stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize, like, no, there is some, like, genuinely crazy shit in these Muppet movies that will blow your mind. And it's like, I think it shows to me that, like, yeah, like, this, the magic is still here. There are people who are going to watch stuff like this and be like, how did they do that?
And, well, so this is the other thing, is I feel like it gives it a sense of, like, timelessness, in the same way that, like, Wizard of Oz has a timelessness, because they only use practical effects.
Right, right. Or even, some of the older, like, live-action Disney movies.
Sure. Which, I mean, I think of the movies... I feel like of the good movies we watched... This might be my least favorite, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely, like, it's how do I say this? Like, it's better than any Swan Princess we've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. And okay, so comparing it to the last Christmas movie we watched, which was The Muppet Family Christmas, I'd watch The Muppet Family Christmas, like, 5 more times before I watched Emmett Otter again.
Oh, 110%.
But I would watch Emmett Otter 12 more times before I watched the Mickey Mouse Mickey's Special Christmas 2 or whatever it was called.
Yeah, yeah.
Twice
yeah.
Upon no, a Christmas.
Yes.
It's a real sliding scale.
No, I yeah, it's well, and I mean, like, even though I don't again, even though I don't know, I don't really like it, it doesn't really hit me the way that the other Muppet movies have. It's still like it was still a phenomenal watch, just to see it happen, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Oh, what a time.
Oh, it's also free on YouTube, as Andy said.
to put this in perspective, I think part of the reason why this movie is fine, is better in my mind, is that it is only effectively 45 minutes long.
I mean, that is nice. It was probably originally made for TV for an hour spot, right?
Right.
It does kind of feel like a slog with essentially the same song 3 to 4 times, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Direct to Video. VHS?
VHS.
Sorry, I got distracted by this line that said that a remake was announced. I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, I don't want to know about it.
It was also in 2019. It might not exist. Like, a lot of film stuff got canceled after 2019.
In 2019? Yeah.
Have you heard about this?
I don't know. Old news, man.
Old news. I have been your host, Tony Robusto.
Yeah, I've been your host, Andy Reyes.
You can find me at inspiredbytrueevents.org and the podcast at direct2.video.
Yes, you can also find me at the podcast at direct2.video. Be on the lookout for the reoccurrence of Project Revolution once I get my setup back together.
Exciting.
And that's going to be at Ethical Games Journalism on YouTube.
Oh, give me a second. I got to get the name right. I think it's A Ukulele for Christmas. I'm like 99%. But now I'm like, but what if it's not? What if it's not?
It's a different stringed instrument?
I mean, it's definitely ukulele.
But is it for Christmas?
But is it?
It could be a ukulele for nativity.
Where is this stupid thing? Oh, it's under my music. What am I, an idiot? Yeah, it is. Thank you to Lee Rosevere for A Ukulele for Christmas, which we'll probably be playing about now, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. In the new year, in the coming year, which I refuse to look upon with dread, we are going to watch Swan Princess, A Fairy Tale Is Born.
Uh-huh. Yes. And you know, the beginning of the end for the Swan Princess, but...
I feel like that's what you said last time.
But for real this time. So,
yeah.
Now, I know that I was like, well, we could ring in the new year watching these last two Swan Princess movies.
Uh-huh.
But I got to thinking.
A dangerous pastime.
It is. It really is. It's rare, not unheard of. But if you could check out the Google Drive where I have our list of movies.
Okay, let's see here.
And at the bottom, there's a new tab.
A new tab? Oh, no. No.
We don't have to do this. I just want you to see.
It is a really funny idea.
You know, we haven't really explored the cinematic oeuvre afforded to us by Pinocchio.
I am never going to get Chaimi to watch a movie with me again.
I mean, oh, surely one of these Pinocchios is going to be good, right?
Interesting question. This is a cursed idea that you have come up with.
Because May has been wanting to watch the Guillermo del Toro Pinocchio movie for a while now. And I was always like, well, I want to put it off because I know we compare it with, because the live action Walt Disney one came out and the original animated one. I was like, there's something there.
Your idea was, so let's watch it in like 8 to 10 months.
If we do it in chronological order. Yeah. But we don't have to. Right? This is a curated list. There are apparently like 3 TV shows, 5 TV specials.
This is like a, what we're describing now is like a 4-hour long YouTube video essay where like I experienced every Pinocchio media.
All Pinocchio media was fired at my body over the course of a year, and this is what I learned.
It was like, we're all really excited about the new Lies of P.
I had Lies of P on this list, and then I was like, well, that's just silly.
That's a bit much. It's a time commitment. It's a video game.
Yeah, right. It's a long game. It's not a very short game. Also, I don't own it, so you know. But I did have it on here because it's one of the most recent pieces of Pinocchio media.
Right. It is a maybe. I do feel a little bit like not the actual human Joel Hodgson, but the character he played.
Yeah.
Where I have been trapped in a spaceship and forced to watch every version of Pinocchio.
Right. Well, that's, I, as we go on, I'm like, well, every year could be a new challenge. Right? Now, this doesn't have to happen. All right. We have plenty of things on the back burner to watch.
This is true. It is a fun idea, though.
And we'd be starting and ending with the Walt Disney Pinocchio, which I thought was very fitting. Mm-hmm.
So here's, can I tell you my one big problem?
Yeah.
I don't like Pinocchio.
No, me neither.
And what I mean by that is I don't like the idea of Pinocchio. I feel like it's a flawed concept that people get really into and then make their own takes, and then you see that take and you're like, yeah, I guess you did that.
Did you ever read Casey Green's Adventures of Pinocchio?
I did. Where it was more or less
a direct,
supposed to reflect the actual book. Yeah. And that was wild. I think that was something of a challenge for himself. I don't think he finished it.
No, he did.
Did he?
It's done.
Okay. I'm trying to, maybe I did read it all then. I definitely found it after it had been dead for a while. So.
Yeah,
now that I think about it, I remember him on a beach. That's got to be near the end.
Yeah, he gets to the end. It's fucking bananas.
I know he kills that cricket.
He kills the hell out of that cricket, dude.
I feel like if we do this, there's got to be some sort of evil fanfare or something. How do you just say out loud, next year, 2026, a year where I'm sure we'll all be having a hard enough time generally, is also going to be the year of the puppet.
The year of the puppet. It's got to be introduced like Resident Evil, yeah. You know?
the year of the puppet.
There are, I'm pretty sure there are like a couple of those like really fucking like absolute bottom of the barrel horror movies that are made about these kind of like free IPs. And there was a Pinocchio one, and I'm so supremely uninterested in those kinds of like horror movies.
Well, maybe you'll change your mind after watching 10 Pinocchios in a row.
I
maybe
really you'll doubt be like, it. Yeah, maybe I'll be hyped. I'll be juiced up. I'll be like, I want to see this puppet kill people. So. We don't have to decide this now, right? We have a whole month. Well, we have a week to really rack our brains. And I think we can end this year on a bit of a cliffhanger. What are we going to watch next week? Who knows? The future is a flat circle, and at the end of it is either Pinocchio or Swan Princess. There is no good timeline here.
Two roads converged in the wood. And I laid down.
and I turned around because they were both bad.
They're bad roads, man.
And I went home.
We should do Year of the Puppet, but it should also be the year that we start getting guests on the podcast. And we're just like, watch this Pinocchio movie and tell me what you think about it.
Yeah. It does feel a bit like, at some point, the fear is like, well, what can you say about it?
Mm-hmm.
It's Pinocchio.
If we had to abandon the concept a little ways in, because we're like, this is getting us nowhere.
Right. I could cut this down to four movies.
There's also another possibility, which I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know how you think about this. So for a while, we did DVD extras where we just shot the shit.
Yeah.
So what we could do, if we wanted to, a marathon of Pinocchio films, is we could also do like the occasional like half hour, I don't know, like
something else,
just so that, I mean, partially to reset our own brains,
yeah,
but just so it's not all the same thing.
I'm looking at it now, and I don't think this is a good idea. I was hoping, my hope when I put this together was that you would say no.
I don't think you recall that the idea for this podcast was a bad idea, Andy, and I did it.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta remember that for a long time, we watched 4 hours worth of movie before we even sat down.
Yeah.
However, if you like, I think, okay. I do think we should do Swan Princess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I like, and by this I mean don't like, the idea even that we have, like, another series that we could always go back to. Which is just every cursed Pinocchio movie ever made. Yeah, I mean, I would probably hate a little bit doing Pinocchio, the Walt Disney version, and pairing it with something. But what I'm seeing is there's a lot of choice there.
Right. Well, that's the thing. And there's also, like, there's the live-action Walt Disney production. There's I would think pairing the live-action Walt Disney movie with Geppetto, and then the Guillermo del Toro animated version with the original Walt Disney animated version might be fun.
So we're just skipping Pinocchio, A True Story, as though it's just a garbage cash-in with the other two Pinocchio movies released in the same year. Is that it? You don't want to know the true story? You don't, I don't think.
Dude, it's not good. Oh, it's got Tom Kenny in it as Geppetto.
I mean, I like Tom Kenny, I suppose.
So how do you feel about the summer of the puppet then? 4 months, four movies.
4 months, four movies, all puppet.
All puppet.
Let's see how we feel in the summer.
Yeah, I'm going to highlight the ones that I want to pair up so that I don't forget. And yeah, and you know, there's these eight other ones.
There's these eight other ones.
And I
also, my understanding is that's pretty cut down.
It is. And let me tell you, of these eight, one of them looks like something I would watch were I not doing this project.
Of the eight other ones?
Of the eight other ones.
So we're not talking about the Del Toro one?
No. Of the four, we are definitely going to watch. The Del Toro one's the only one I care to watch.
Right.
But there is one other one in this eight, and I'd have to find it, because again, they're all fucking called Pinocchio.
So it's not Pinocchio and the Emperor of the Night?
I don't think so. Although I am imminently curious.
Who's the Emperor of the Night?
Yeah, what's going on?
Oh my gosh, this is such an 80s film. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, so I am intrigued by how 80s this movie is.
Yeah, Pinocchio and the Emperor of the Night. I believe it's billed as a sequel to the original story.
Cursed.
So it's like, you've read the book, now see what else he did.
Sure, like Return to Oz, where it's like, this is a sequel to Wizard of Oz, but not the popular movie.
Right.
Okay, I think we need to end this podcast.
Yeah. Before more Pinocchio movies come into existence.